This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
My name is Rich Bradbury. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes, and I'm in the studio with
Audrey Raj.
I'm Vinny Baraj.
We're going to be with you all the way through until 1 o'clock this afternoon. And if you'd like to get in touch, get us via WhatsApp 018 789 8899. On Twitter or on Instagram, we are at BFM Radio. Audrey is on Twitter duty. Arvin is on WhatsApp duty. Mm-hmm. Make their lives happy and help them out a little bit. Right, stories for today. We'll be starting off with about a little question. Can corporations learn to innovate like startups? We've asked you guys this question from 10 a.m. this morning. We're going to give you some suggestions of companies that have innovated like startups and others that perhaps didn't when they should have done. We'll be then moving on to how a robo-government could be to the rescue. Something to talk about, particularly with Brexit in mind right now for me. Story number three, how the demo foretold our tech future in 1968. What is it about you going backwards and then giving us, you know...
I don't know. It's actually connected to that story.
The AT&T story.
Yeah. So it'll be kind of fun.
All right, and then wrapping up with how Apple have been ordered to stop selling phones in China. You might have heard that story over on the news. That's all coming up on BizBytes today. Right, so let me give you a little bit of a history lesson. Back in 1975... I wasn't born then, before you start laughing.
Really?
Yes, really? Oof. A young Kodak engineer, his name was Stephen Sasson, he showed his bosses a device he'd cobbled together from a portable digital cassette recorder, a Super 8 movie camera, 16 batteries, and various other components. The device could capture and display a small black and white image on a TV screen. His bosses were not impressed, but they allowed him to keep working on the project. And in 1989, he presented them with a DSLR camera that looked and functioned much like the ones on sale today. Kodak, fearing it would cannibalize their film sales, promptly buried it. Mm-hmm. Proved to be a very costly mistake. The company's film business was swept away by the switch to digital, and its eventual embrace of the new technology came way too late to avoid bankruptcy in 2012. This is what happens and is a textbook example of what can happen when corporations ignore innovation. In a world where companies such as Uber, Airbnb, and Amazon can disrupt established business models in record time, there's arguably never been a greater need for large organizations to develop new products and services. So Kodak was the example that I wanted to use today for companies that didn't make the switch and didn't pivot when they should have done. Have you got any others in mind that you can think of?
Yeah. Blockbuster could have bought Netflix.
Yes.
So they were offered Netflix.
Right.
And then they kind of... It's a known thing that he was sort of like...
He was arrogant, wasn't he, about it, the whole thing?
Yeah. The founder of Netflix was sort of like laughed out of the meeting.
Right.
Because they said that no one would switch to... The internet is not strong enough to support streaming.
Yeah.
So everyone's going to keep like buying, like renting or buying DVDs and stuff. So they just didn't buy Netflix.
Mm.
And now there's no more Blockbuster.
Oh, dear. Audrey?
I think having that startup mojo kind of feel to whatever you do, any corporation or even the government for the matter, you know, because think about it, if the Malaysian government would have embraced Grab, their headquarters would be in Malaysia right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at companies like, you know, Google, for example, who obviously were a start, like most companies were a startup at some point. But Google, I think, still in many ways still have that, you know, startup mindset. You know, they do things like, you know, opening innovation to everybody with their 20% thing. You know, they do the whole recreating a startup-like environment when you go into like the Googleplex and you go into any Google office, no matter where you are in the world. There's always something a little bit cool, like you were saying yesterday, Ords, you know.
Those might just be perks and not benefits.
Exactly.
Yeah.
However, it looks pretty cool. They've got that idea of gamifying the stuff that they do as well, even with the Google homepage and the splash page when you go to that. Appointing a champion, I've noticed that they do. They'll have somebody in their office who is the spokesperson for that kind of office and will always be that one person who's out doing little bits and pieces. And they kind of customize it, their offices, for each culture. So if you go to you know, the Google offices here in KL, for example, compared to the Google offices over in Beijing, similar kind of approach, but slightly different, and it's just right for who they are. And that's the kind of ideas that companies need to adopt nowadays to move forward and be innovative, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to admit, Rich, you know, it gets hard to maintain that startup mentality as the organization grows. You know, it not only grows by numbers, it grows by layers and grows by regulations and formalities. And the next thing you know is the person at the top is so far out of reach with the person who is dealing with the customers on the ground that I think that is where the startup mojo, startup mentality gets lost.
Right.
I mean, for me, I've worked in corporations from my first job. Mm. I've worked for one of the biggest media broadcasting companies in Malaysia, one of the biggest banks in Malaysia, one of the biggest publications in Malaysia, and then I came to BFM. And for me, this has been the best place that I've ever worked in.
Right.
You know, and that's just because today we are quite a big company compared mm-hmm. to where we were, say, when I joined 8 years ago. But we still have a bit of that startup mentality to our what we do every day, right? Mm. But some of the things that I already see that is kind of getting lost, just a few things off the top of my head, ideas. Mm. You know, like sometimes ideas get drowned out just because...
there's a lot more people.
There's a lot more people, exactly. And then we're also not as fluid to changes. Like previously, you know, someone would have a bright idea and then we'd be like, let's do it and let's do it next week. Mm. But that's not how it works today. You know, things take longer to come to fruition, right? And then things like this is not something that I've seen at BFM, but I know other companies happen to suffer this. Is they lose that risk, they lose that appetite for risk. All of a sudden, they're more calculative when it comes to taking these big steps. And you know, at BFM, some of our biggest lessons have come from our failures,
right?
And we've actually grown from some of our failures, right? Mm. So these are the things that, you know, startups endure these failures, and we learn from it and only get better. And I think that BFM is taking many lessons from the big companies that still have that startup mojo, like your Amazon and your Apple and your Google, because we're trying to keep that startup mentality. I know Malik constantly tells us to do that, right?
Yeah.
We're trying to keep that, and we're looking to these big guns to do it because there's a big payoff if you keep that mentality.
Question though, when does a startup no longer get to call itself a startup? That's the kind of golden question. Is it at what point in the life cycle of that company, of that product, can you no longer call it a startup?
Like, what are the signals?
Right.
I think the first thing is when they make enough money. Like, they have a lot of money now, they are responsible for like huge reserves and more people that they are, you know, that they take responsibility for. Another one is when there's too much hierarchy. Mm. So when you, let's say you're a person who has just joined, or let's say you're an intern, and the thing, you have an idea, but the idea never reaches past three levels or something,
yep,
to past your supervisor, then I think it becomes a corporate, like a corporate or corporation.
Mm.
Anything below that, I think if there are ways for anyone in the company to send the ideas up to the highest person on the peak, then that is essentially still a startup company.
Interesting.
I remember doing an interview on Resource Center, I can't remember, but it was quite a while ago, where they said that HR, the minute you have a formal HR unit in your company, then you are beginning to transition into a corporation and out of that whole startup mode, because you start to make more formal recruitments. It's no longer the company hiring your A-type personalities or someone whom you think is filled with enthusiasm that really wants to be part of this goal and this mission, the mission of the company, but someone who just fits the role.
Right.
Someone who can get the job done.
Right.
Instead of like trying to move together. So that is one of the things I think HR plays a big role in, like moving into that whole corporate mentality and away from startup mentality.
Is there any downside of being a startup even after like a few years, maybe after 15 years, but you're still having the startup mentality? Is there a downside to that?
I don't know. I think me personally, thinking about that, the only thing that I would see as being a downside is that people still refer to you as that startup, you know, or you still think of yourself as that startup, and they might not necessarily take you as seriously, you know, because you're still playing around with the idea, oh, we're just still starting out. No, you've been going, you know, 15 years or 20 years or whatever. You can't call yourself a startup anymore. If you can't take yourself seriously enough to take that next step, then why should somebody else take you seriously enough?
Okay.
I suspect.
So do you have like an example of a company that is still a startup, even though they're huge, like a major corporation that still behaves like a startup?
No.
I have one. It's obvious.
Go
but
on.
It's Netflix.
Yeah.
So it's
Uber, in fact.
But Uber's had scandal after scandal after scandal.
Mm.
So they have, I don't know, they've started to behave like, the last 3 years at least, they've started to behave like a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say Netflix, simply because they take risks. They are losing more money than they're earning. but then they still believe that they will make more money in the future. And they are putting on content that people actually want to see, that are people-centric and not company-centric.
Interesting. Mm. All right, folks, you can get us via WhatsApp. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter and Instagram. Can corporations learn to innovate like startups? Give us some examples of companies that you can think of. Arvin's just given us Netflix. I've given you Kodak as a failure. Orgy, who did you have?
I had Grab.
Grab, that was it. Tell us a bit more about Grab just before we go into a break.
Oh, what about Grab?
Tell us why you think where they sit in this plane.
Well, basically, I felt like if the Malaysian government had, perked up and paid more interest into, promising startup companies like this, then maybe Grab would be headquartered in Malaysia and not in Singapore.
Oh, she said it. Time for a break on that note. Some music coming up from Black Rebel Motorcycle Club. It is Love Burns here on Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.